Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by a guy who was referred to us by a previous guest. If you remember Kyle Roach from a few episodes ago, he said this our guest today was unlocking some crazy potential on their account execs and helping them really level up their game. And so I decided to reach out, get him on the show. And everybody, welcome Justin Clifford. Thanks for joining us today, Justin.
Yeah, Colin, I really appreciate the opportunity. And obviously, thanks to Kyle for saying nice things. And obviously thanks to you for doing what you do.
Yeah, man. Really excited. This is a fun one, 'cause it's like, there's so much on managing. There's some good stuff on managing salespeople, but I feel like there isn't enough, right? There's some really good books out there, and like Mike Weinberg's written some really, like a really great one. I know there's a bunch of others that are not coming to the top of my mind right now, but I feel like helping level up your salespeople is something that's a huge sort of gap in the market for sales talent. And just like if we look at how sales managers are typically made, I started in sales. Did you start in sales? I did a bachelor's that had nothing to do with management, although I think management was in the title, right? But like, how much do they really teach you about managing a sales team? And it's not just about managing. So much of this is about, you know, coaching and working on your team and making sure that they're motivated and their careers aligned. And, you know, a lot of this just isn't covered in some of the more traditional stuff. And so I always take any opportunity I can when I hear about somebody doing awesome stuff for their team. I want to figure that out, and I want to learn, because I think we as sales people have leveled up so much. And I think a lot of the books and all that haven't caught up. So really excited to have you on the show and hear what you're doing to unlock some of this potential in your reps.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, as hard as I feel I work, it's really nice for Kyle to recognize some of those things that are happening. But you know, I'm just kind of the guide, right? Without hiring the right people and without having the chance to get really good people on the team, I can't do my job. So they deserve probably the lion's share of the credit for being who they are. But I'm happy to walk through any, you know, experiences and processes that we've taken to this point, so that Kyle can say, hey, these things are going on, and it looks like Justin's playing a role.
For sure. He also paid me $100 to say real nice things about you. So
that actually he's paid more than others, so you might want to hit him up again.
I should have been a better negotiator there. Hey,
you left money on the table for sure.
Damn it. Here, I thought I was being all clever. Yeah. Right on. So talk to me about, what is unlocking growth in your AEs or your teams? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that it means is that everybody comes with potential, right? They've gone through a relatively rigorous hiring process. They've proven themselves, not just to me, but my counterpart, other people in the organization that have gotten some face time with them. They come with the potential, and now it's really up to us to make sure that that we set them up for success. Right. So, and it's not just enablement. It's not just leveling up sales skills, but it's also really understanding them as a person, making sure that we're dialed into who they are as individuals, because, as much as you want to try to separate work and life, it's really, really hard to have those things completely separate. Right. And, especially when you care about what you do, you think about the things at home, right, during work, and during work during the time at home, you probably think about work a little bit, and that's okay. And if we don't, I have found that if we don't pay attention to that whole person, then we're probably missing something along the way. It just makes sense for us to think about them as individuals and not just salespeople at Lessonly.
100%. I think this is something I struggled with. I know this is something I struggled with in the early days of my sales career. Cause I felt like there were two different versions of Colin. There was like Colin that you'd hang out and have beers with and would go home. And then there was Colin that we'd get on the phone. Mm-hmm. Right. And I almost, in my mind, I almost had like, I maintained these two different versions. Mm-hmm. And, I just found that really hard. You've got this other kind of fake version of yourself that you're bringing to the office and bringing onto sales calls. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're trying to create a genuine connection with a prospect, having to do that through the, like through the lens of the facade, a veneer of this like second artificial self that's, you know, a little bit less sarcastic, a little bit less candid. It's just these extra layers that go in front of the sort of normal call and operating system to be like, hey, don't be too much of a dickhead. I mean, that one's probably good to stay because that can get out of control. But like, yeah, I used to be very bland on calls and I wasn't bringing my whole self. And now maybe it's just the, you know, the time and the experience and, you know, everybody, and I've had some mentors advising me on bring your whole self, not just to the sales calls, but to the office.
Yeah, totally.
That's helped so much.
It's such a big deal. And a mentor of mine, Jim Anderson, at a company named called SwitchFast in Chicago. I worked for him for 6.5 years. And one of the things I went through probably my fourth sales training, and then he went on a sales call with me, and he came back from that sales call and let a few hours pass. And before he left, he came over to my desk and said, "Hey, that thing you did earlier, like, that's great. We appreciate you using the training that we're paying for. But you're taking it too literally. You have to be yourself. I've seen you be yourself. It's great. You should do it." And I've seen that with some of the reps that come into Lessonly, some of the AEs that we get a chance to work with. There are the AEs that have kind of started at Lessonly as SDRs and they've right off the bat, this is the first place that they've ever worked and they know it's okay to be themselves. And then you have somebody come in, that's worked for 6, 7, 8 years somewhere else. And man, trying to take that mask off a little bit, even though they did a good job in the interview process and doing that, once you get in front of prospects, sometimes you just need to shake somebody and say, "Hey, you're here because you're you. Mm-hmm. We need more of you." Once that happens, prospects just melt over some of the AEs that they get to work with when they compare them to AEs through other buying processes.
For sure. And it's so much easier internally because you don't have to worry about you don't have to process everything. You can just sort of show up and be.
Yeah.
And it's way more fun.
Feels good, right?
Yeah. I'm cocky, sarcastic, and kind of funny. At least I'm having fun on the calls. And I think that shows, and like, that's going to resonate with some people and it's not going to resonate with other people. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's the key. Like, you're okay with it.
Yeah.
You feel good. You're happy.
Totally. Yeah. And if that causes me to lose a deal here or there, great. But it's probably also going to edge a deal or two in my favor. And I think it's going to be a net benefit.
Totally.
Yeah. So talk to me about what's the approach here? So I think we're kind of aligned under what it means to unlock their potential. What's your approach? I know you have a pretty specific one here at Lessonly. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Our mission at Lessonly is to help people do better work so they can do better lives or live better lives. And, obviously we happen to do that through software and that's great. But also the methodology and the philosophy of learning, is kind of almost, underlined by a philosophy of just working, right? Max Yoder, our CEO, wrote a book, Do Better Work. Here it is.
Oh, wow. You just happen to have it. Oh,
just happen to have it.
Must be on your desk at all times, right?
Yeah, I've got one on my desk, on my nightstand, and in my car. For those long stoplights. But really, it's broken up into 8 sections, really easy to read, but it's just about the concept of how you show up to work, very similar to what you're talking about. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is vulnerability. And really, it's just the acknowledgement that we don't have it all figured out, right? So if you stand up there as a sales leader and you say you've got everything figured out, that almost gives the false impression or the false sense to account executives that they should always have it all figured out, right? But when I can go in front of the team that I get to work with every day and say, "Hey, I don't know. You tell me, what are your thoughts? I've never been through this before. I've never seen something like this. I don't know. Let's brainstorm. Let's work together on it." It starts to give them a very safe place where that they can be themselves, not just at their desk, but it gives them space to be themselves on the phone too, right? We could probably hire or just put some machine in place to cycle through deals, right? I don't think that'll go very well. Because we solve business problems at Lessonly and we have to have a certain element of understanding people. We have to separate ourselves sometimes through our personalities. and showing how much we care and those types of things. So that allows that safe space to operate in, which has been very important for a lot of the success that we've had.
For sure. And normally I wouldn't ask, bring a guest on and be like, hey, tell me about your company core values. Sure. The reason I'm doing it today is just, I don't know if the listeners can tell, but in the, I've had, cause I get a couple of more opportunities to chat with these guys than you all get to hear. But in both of the pre-interviews and sort of the preamble we do a little bit before the show, like that sort of the values actually really show through. Unlike any other guest we've had on the show. And because it's, we don't need to go into exactly what you guys do, but it's all centered around learning. And I love that the whole company is centered around learning. And I think that's just it's a great thing to really highlight. Mm-hmm. And so normally we're trying to we don't want this to be too promotional. Sure. You know, it's about the content, but I think you guys you're good examples of living your company's values. And so with that, I was going to ask, you were talking about vulnerability. Can you give me an example of how you have modeled that for your team?
Absolutely. But first of all, thank you for saying what you said. We talk to a lot of candidates that want to work at Lessonly, and we're very, very lucky to be able to do that. But one of the things that makes us happiest is when people say, hey, I hear and see a lot of things about your company outside that make it really shine. It turns out I'm feeling that while I'm here, right? And that is a really, really cool thing to feel. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I want my $100 too.
Hey, you're leaving money on the table.
I'm fair.
I think an example of one example of vulnerability, and I think these things just happen every day, right? I mean, I can't be someone who stands in front of a team and says that I have all the answers. It's just not going to work. So it happens every day, but a really good example and kind of a deep example, I think, is our territory model. About a year ago or so, realized that we had put a territory model in place. We'd had it for 5 quarters and it was fine. It had done some really good things that we were hoping that it would do, but it would also kind of going from no territory model to a territory model, I think throwing the pendulum a little bit too far. And it was creating a real inequity in the ability to be successful at Lessonly. We basically chopped up region by region and said, here's your patch of land. You might have 6 major metros. You might have 1. Who knows? Good luck. Everybody's got the same quota. It was tough, right? So in doing that, we started to feel like there were a few people that were really, really successful. And they're really good reps. No doubt. But there were also some really good reps that weren't being successful. And the territory model played a big role in that. It wasn't the only thing, but it played a big role. And we started to get some feedback that people didn't feel like they could be successful every day when they showed up. So we made some adjustments and we rolled those adjustments out. And within a month, I was hearing AEs come to me and say, hey, this is a 180. But in order to make those adjustments, I had to stand in front of the entire team and say, hey, we made a mistake, right? We tried something. We probably let it go too long. Some of you probably haven't made the money that you were expecting to make, haven't seen the success that you thought you'd have here. We get it. We appreciate that you're still here. But we want to make it right. And here's what we're thinking, right? So one of our core values at Lessonly is we share before we're ready. And this was an opportunity to do that. So we went to the A's and said, here's what we're thinking. What do you think? Right? We let them poke holes in it. We let them ask questions. And that was just such an eye-opening experience, not only to say, hey, we got this thing wrong, but also, hey, what do you think about these changes? And if we make these, what are we missing? And things dramatically shifted. We've had more reps to our pacing goals and our quota goals, and people are feeling like they can show up every day and they've got a shot to be successful. We don't want to make it easy, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't the easy train. It is still a very hard job, but we've given them kind of a platform to say, hey, I can show up to work and I know my path to be successful. And I believe I can make it
a very low percentage. What is a good, what is the right percentage for you of reps hitting quota?
Yeah. I mean, to realistically, I'd love to be in that like 70 to 80%.
Mm-hmm.
It gives room for a bad quarter. It gives room for, you know, people having a really good quarter the quarter before and maybe draining their pipe, which happens.
Totally.
But in that 70, 80%, I mean, if you can have 80% of people that show up and say, hey, I've been successful, and I feel like I can continue to be successful and continue to be challenged, I like to shoot for it. I think it's probably, aspirational. You know, we went from in that situation, probably, 30%, to now being at closer to 70%. So we're on that path.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the territory model wasn't the only shift we made, but it was a big one to help support that. But I don't know, 70, 80% feels good to me. I don't know. What do you think? You talk to more people than I do.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I feel the same way. 70, 80%. Okay. If you go any higher, like if 90% of your reps are hitting, it's like you're probably not pushing enough.
Right.
You're having a really great quarter, right? Yeah. And like that happens sometimes. Right. But if you average it out over the years, you know, probably 80%. You also got to factor in that you're usually ramping up a rep or two, mm-hmm. so that's gonna play into it.
But yeah, totally.
Yeah, we're ramping up a new team. And that was the thing that we're going back and forth over is with this SDR team, we want to build it. So one of our KPIs for the manager is percentage of reps on quota.
Mm, okay.
And it's not just the raw output of the team, but, cause we're putting her in charge of sort of comp design and sort of goal setting as well as the performance. And so we've got like we had the high level, you know, this is the number of meetings we expect. This is the attendance rate or sort of the next step rate. And then, as a measure of her performance and her ability to sort of manage the team and set really good goals and then coach mm-hmm. to those goals, not just say, hey, we want to hit these lofty goals and then not do anything. Percentage of reps on quota is sort of our way of measuring how impactful our manager is.
Yeah. That's really cool. I like that. I don't spend probably enough time thinking about the percentages as it might sound like, but I think having that picture, I mean, if you're at 90, 100%, somebody's probably coming to you and saying, hey, let's talk to me about how you set your goals. Right.
Yeah.
But I think the important part for us is that when we were at that 30, 40% range, the company was still hitting goals. Like we were still doing well. And so you've got this perception that, hey, we're growing, but then you've got all these other people who are saying, hey, I'm not. Right. Yeah. And I think that was a big thing. So having that percentage, kind of guide us was important in that particular range. And I probably should pay more attention to it, like you're alluding to.
Yeah. I have the luxury of, I've recently gone through a design of a new program that we're going to be rolling out, and that building an SDR team is one of them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's fresh of mind. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Absolutely.
Cool. So we talked about vulnerability. What's what follows vulnerability?
Yeah, I think you know, I talked a little bit about share before you're ready, and we, you know, have since that territory model shift, and when I saw the reaction for it, and I guess I'll come back to a little bit of part of my story about the vulnerability. I came into less than about 30 employees or so had started there, and all of them seemed to have some connection, college connection, or like everybody knew somebody. And I feel like I was probably one of the first like outsiders that didn't really know anybody pre-Lessonly, of the employees. And that brought with me like this feeling that I had to get everything right all the time. Right. And it took my counterpart at the time, Matt Lubbers, who runs our partnerships, Matt, in front of a whiteboard one day, just looked at me and said, hey, dude, it doesn't have to be perfect. One of our values is share before you're ready. You need to start thinking about it this way. It's okay if it's not perfect. And that was kind of a light bulb moment for me and made me feel like I was in that safe space. So it's been much easier since I've been able to learn how to do it, to actually model it. And I think that allows AEs to come to me and say, hey, here's an email and a really important email that I need to send. What do you think? Right. Or they share with each other, or they say, hey, here's a recording of this call. I would love to hear, how I can do better next time. So they're doing those types of things. Asking clarifying questions is also a core value, and it's also a chapter in the book. And Colin, like, that curiosity, building that curiosity is so important in the sales process, as you probably know. And our AEs are so good at asking those clarifying questions and living that value, because without asking those clarifying questions, it just leads to a lot of assumptions. And if a prospect feels one way and the AE feels another, you start to set yourself up for quite a bit of disappointment along the way.
Yeah. You have divergent realities where, sure. where like the AE is feeling one way and he feels like he's right. And then the prospect is feeling another way and she's actually right.
Sure.
Yeah. You're not, if you're, yeah, I sort of lack that curiosity or that the openness to being like that. What I'm saying isn't going to register with the prospect. Then you're living in a different reality.
Totally. And that reality, I mean, think about the, you know, forecasting and sales stages and all of those types of things. It really helps, even though we've got processes set that are pretty objective. It does really help AEs to kind of talk with me or talk with others about where they are in the process, because they've asked clarifying questions and I'm not going to forecast this because they said these things and I asked questions and it seems like there's a long way to go. And so when they move things through some forecasting in our forecasting, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, it gives them the opportunity to really expand on and add some color to the deals that they're working and the opportunities that they have without making too many assumptions.
Love it. And you're right. We'll definitely get to the forecast reviews a little bit later here. One of the last ones we kind of talked about was, I think you brought up the autonomy to get your teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
You've mentioned, you know, you grew up in sales, right? You were an individual contributor, as was I. And I think giving people the autonomy to learn on their own while giving them a really nice support system and support foundation is really important. If we just lined up all of the role plays, and we do a lot of role plays and do a lot of practice, especially on an onboarding scenario, but on a regular basis anyway, but if we just did that, and let somebody loose, they probably have an interesting reality that they're going to see, right? So instead of going through just the role plays and all those things that we do during onboarding, we also start to drip in some of the real life things that are low risk to the company in most part low risk to the company that they are typically smaller opportunities. But we start to drip them in and let them actually have the at bats. Right. And when I say getting teeth kicked in, it's just the way I felt a lot as an individual contributor. But it's also an opportunity to say, hey, this thing went really well. Do more of that. Right. And provide some coaching opportunity in real life scenarios. But I want them to be able to have the space to operate, to create them, their own AE at Lessonly personality, right? I don't want them all to be the same. They're not going to be all the same, right? And we can't expect that. There are AEs that have been in sales for 6, 7, 8 years, and some that are in their first sales job. They're going to be different, but they need to have the room to kind of flex, to become themselves, to find out what their actual style is of being a Lessonly AE. Cause it's probably different than being a predictable revenue AE or, an AE at any other software company. It's going to be different. It's Lessonly, just as it would be if you moved any other place.
Totally. And you've got to give them the freedom. Like I think I bring a lot of personality to my calls and that's my style. Right. Sure. It feels like you're doing the same thing, as you're saying, here's the framework. It's sort of like, and I'm not a jazz musician, but it's kind of like the idea of jazz or blues is, hey, we're going to play this, you know, it's 12 bar in E, right? So you provide, this is the loose constraints to the song. Mm-hmm. Do whatever the fuck you want, right? Yeah. Like figure out how to make it your own.
Yeah.
Right. And that's sort of when we're onboarding people, and it sounds like the way you do it is, here's the, you know, here's some of the fundamentals, here's the base, but you got to make this song your own.
Totally. Totally. And it's so important. Like you mentioned, I mean, when you talk about differentiation in a sales process and you've got 2 or 3 or 4 or 12 competitors that you're going up against, if you can't be yourself, you're going to run a lower chance of winning that deal, I think. Sorry, I feel like I was cutting you off there.
Totally agree.
And so giving that room to kind of find, like, just find yourself, right? Like, we're not sending you out in the wild and you have to go deep into some spiritual thing, but find yourself as an AE at Lessonly and get your teeth kicked in a little bit, find out what you need to know by getting questions asked that you don't know the answer to, and be vulnerable enough to say, hey, I don't know the answer, but I'll go find out for you.
I love that. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I just listened to one on, like, the Learning Brain is one of the great courses. Okay. I say that like I've taken a bunch. This is the first one I've taken, but it talked about sort of how the brain learns and when we do it best. And I won't go into the whole audiobook because it was 12 hours and I understood like a small percentage of it. But one of the things that I really took away was you learn most from the failure. And it's not just like, oh, I tried something and it didn't work. It's the act of, like, really struggling. And it's the act of struggle that forces your brain to sort of think through all the different things. Wow. That's one of those things that's really challenging to replicate when it comes to when you're onboarding people. If it's just, you know, all in an LMS and you're like, hey, watch this video, role play with me here, it can be helpful. Mm-hmm. But it takes it up another notch when you're on or two when you're live on the phone with a customer. So I love that you're sort of pushing people out and letting them get their teeth kicked in. I do believe that's one of the best ways to learn.
Sure. And you know, it happens with experienced AEs too, right? You let them loose on a big deal that they've never run, and it's a 6-month sales cycle. And they're used to 3-month sales cycles, right? You're going to learn a lot in that. Right. There will be little failures and smaller wins along the way in that deal. And it's really important to stop, make sure that we're stopping and not just looking at the end in mind, but celebrate those wins, right? Celebrate those little things that have gone well and the good feedback that you're getting and the clarifying questions that you asked. And then when things don't go well, let's step back a second and let's talk about it. And it kind of goes into a rule my high school baseball coach kind of gave me he called the 24-hour rule for me. He realized I was sulking a lot when we lost. And so he instituted the 24-hour rule. And in those 24 hours when we lost, we figured out why we lost, right? We talked about it. We learned some lessons and we had to move on in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually have a few AEs that I work with that take losing so much harder than they celebrate their wins. And so we've instituted the 24-hour rule in some respects and rules that say, hey, if here's your baseline and you sulk this much, right, and learn, you have to celebrate this much. And if it's this low, then it's got to be this high. But it's got to be equal to keep kind of that, just the general, just the general feeling of being able to come in and be successful every day and just the way you feel every day, right? You've got to make sure that you're celebrating those things. So we take a lot of those little wins and a lot of those little learning opportunities throughout those processes, whether they're onboarding or they've been there for 3-4 years.
That's great, man. Yeah. I love the idea of not letting them get sulk for too long and not letting them get too high.
Yeah.
It can be super impactful. I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but they were talking about, like, the average length an emotion sticks around for is actually a minute and a half.
Really?
And beyond that, it's ourselves hanging on to that emotion.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it was probably something on meditation or mindfulness, or I want to say it was Naval Ravikant from AngelList. And probably on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Okay.
I was listening to him most recently, but it could have also been Naval's podcast. But yeah, he was talking about that. And then everything else is just us sort of hanging on to it and not letting go of this one thing. I've been thinking about that. It's like, that's been stuck in my brain for the last couple of days. And
there's a concept then you choose what to do with it afterwards.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And there's a book that kind of got me heading in this direction. And it was years and years ago. I was in college. And it was a quote from a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I've talked about it a bunch on the podcast, but I'll talk about it again briefly just because it was a really important book to me. And the quote that really stuck with me is, in between stimulus and response, there's a gap. And within that gap exists our opportunity to choose how we feel about it or to choose our response. So I don't have the quote exactly right. Sure. But the idea that it's not just a constant stream of inputs into my brain and then it instantly reacts. It's like, oh, you can actually put a little space in there. Mm-hmm. And then there's something happens to you and you can choose to sort of step aside. Be like, this is regular Colin. I can just step aside and be like, okay, that happened.
Yep.
And then just like, so what? And then kind of like, how do I want to feel about this?
That like one piece sort of set me on like getting into reading more about, you know, stoicism and mindfulness. And I haven't done too much on meditation, but I'm starting to, we did a podcast on it a couple episodes ago and I'm totally drawing a blank on the number. But if you've listened to them, you've heard it. It was a great one. Recommend checking it out. We'll throw a link in the show notes, but yeah, the not getting too high and not letting yourself get too low. I love the 24-hour rule. I'm curious to see with the impact that the minute and a half rule has on me, because that's been one of those like really easy to remember, hard to implement things.
Totally. Have you been able to actually like the stimulus and the response, right? When you kind of step aside and you look down at this thing,
yeah,
that changed any sort of like any emotion that you typically would just fire off of without thinking a whole lot?
Oh, for sure. 100%. And it's like along the same time, like I've had to level up as a human, because I'm now our company's probably getting close to 40 people and my responsibilities get, you know, more complex and different than just when I was an account exec. Life was simple. I had a quota. I hit my quota, went home, I drank a beer, hung out with my wife. Things were good. Right. Now it gets more and more complex in managing and making and like, when you're an account exec, you're having a bad day and you get a little bit grumpy, it's fine, right? You got a sales manager, VP, director, whatever you roll up to. Maybe you got a couple of people, if you're in sort of a managerial role that, that are gonna, you know, be involved in that. But when you're like in my role, if I get angry or if I'm disappointed or if I'm, you know, negatively emotional, then that's going to impact everybody that's around me. And then they're going to try and read into that. And I've noticed that when I allow myself to become like, I don't know, emotionally aroused in a negative way, my capacity, it's like my brain shrinks. It's like the intelligent part of my brain is like, fuck it, I'm out. And it just sort of like, I'm going to go hang out back here, have a pint with your hair. I'll be back whenever you stop being this jerk version of yourself. I'll come back and I'll start thinking again. Sure. And it's like, yeah, it's, I found it makes it hard for me to make good decisions when I allow myself to get too worked up when being high or low.
Sure.
So it's both ways. So, you know, we absolutely still celebrate. But I always think of the quote from, I read this, it was a really good sort of fantasy book called Ender's Game. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the quote's from somewhere else as well. But he always said, fear is the mind killer. And it's like emotion is the mind killer. Yeah. And I've totally like, yeah, I don't know. I read that a while ago. And then that sort of, as I was reading on stoicism, it sort of like built in my head. It's like, yeah, the more I learned about how the brain works is 100%. We are compromised in our ability to make decisions when we get emotional, whether it's high or low.
Sure.
And so being able to stand aside and say, oh, you know what? That just happened and that's okay.
Yeah. I love the physical representation. Like that's going to stand out. The physical representation of just turning and saying, hey, there's this thing right here. It didn't hit me, but it's right here. What am I going to do about it?
Exactly. And just being able to say, you know what? Regular Colin would react and get angry about it, but I accept that this has already happened. And like I can be miserable about it for the rest of the day, but that's my choice to be miserable.
Sure.
Right. It's like this thing that happened, it's done. It's happened. Yeah. If I just accept that and I move on, I can go back to being happy. And I sort of had this realization that I was doing all these things that I was making myself unhappy because this thing had happened to me. And I had this sort of kind of victim mindset. It's like, oh, well, why me? Why me? It's like, well, it just happened. So like, why don't you just fucking drop it? And I'm very candid when I'm talking to myself and not like in a negative way. That's just sort of like, that's the inner monologue here. And so I'm like, I used to ride my bike and I still do. I ride my bike into the office and somebody cut me off. And I, you know, you go through this, like, oh, I'm going to get home. I'm going to tell my wife, like what an asshole this person was. Right. And I just had this, like this reminder in my head that anytime that happened, nobody fucking cares, because what you're going to do is you're going to hang on to it and you're going to feel angry. And then you're going to go home and you're going to transfer that negative energy to whoever it is, whether it's your wife, your husband, or you're going to go to work and you're going to bring that. And it's like, if you just let it go, you'll be happier. And like, it doesn't really matter. And going and bitching and whining about it solves absolutely nothing. So like, why not just let it go?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I think that, Colin, that aligns so well to, and I know you asked about values and I probably am going too far with it, but one of our values is that we highlight what's working. And we base it a lot on, there's a book I think Kyle mentioned called The Thin Book of Appreciative Inquiry. Very much that concept of you know, it's really easy to poke and prod about all the things that have gone, gone awry, right? Or all the things that might give us some of that negative emotion, that I could come home and yell at my wife about, or yell to my wife about the guy that cut me off. Right. But I could also come home and say, hey, there was this thing that happened today and I'm really grateful for it. Right. Or, hey, there's this thing that, that's going on with you and I, and I really love it when that goes on. I would like to do more of that. Right. And that, just having that mentality from a company perspective, all hands meetings, sales meetings, one-on-one time, can be really, really powerful. Especially when we're kind of, I feel like, always looking for the thing that's not going well, trying to fill the gap, trying to find the gap and then fill the gap. Sometimes there's plenty right out in front of you that just need to give a little bit of extra energy to doing more of it.
100%. And it was really bugging me. And so while you were bringing us back to the episode, I went and I found the book, or the episode that I was thinking of. And it's a book, actually, I just started reading, called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. I'm only a few.
Do you want the show notes, or should I write it down?
I'll show it here. Cool. And Sean, who writes our show notes, Sean, can you make sure you throw that in a link there? There's a book recommended to me by a coach that we're talking with, but it's been I'm only probably an eighth of the way through, but it's been a really interesting read so far.
That's great. Thanks for sharing.
Of course, man. I find it's one of the best sort of filters. You find awesome people. You find things that, like the book that you just recommended. I'm going to go back and listen to this and be like, I'm going to go check that book out, and we'll get Sean to throw those in the show notes, because yeah, it's way better than
true. I'll package up a thin book of appreciative inquiry with Do Better Work and awesome. Ship it your way.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. So I want to transition to, we've kind of talked about some of the core values that really help you sort of, it's like the firmware of the team. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you think about like the culture and the code of like what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, these are the things that are immutable. These are the things that don't necessarily change. They might evolve, but you don't really flex on these. This is kind of this is how we operate. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, in terms of on the day-to-day basis, what are the moments in your week that make you feel like you're adding value to your team?
Yeah. I mean, I hope that if you asked them, the team that I work with, I hope if you asked them, you would hear a lot of things, right? Like that's my hope. I think there are two in particular that stand out to me. And the first one is the one-on-one. I have struggled immensely with one-on-ones, in my management career. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know how to guide it. Should we be talking about deals? Should we talk about forecasts? Should we be talking about skills? Should we be talking about feelings? Right? Like I don't know. So for a while I stopped. I just said, you know what? We'll just do forecast stuff. Let's just be business partners in this. And then former director of marketing, Mitch Causey, who was, I think, our second or third employee at Lessonly, who's gone in to be the CEO of his own company, focus on demand gen. He actually stopped me one day, or he actually asked me about one-on-ones. And I said, hey, I don't do them. And he just simply said, hey, why not? And I didn't have a good answer for that, except for the fact that I suck at them. And he was like, well, why don't you just get better at them? So I started calling a lot of people, including Mitch, and trying to like really understand, like, what does it mean to lead a good one-on-one? And it turns out, I think I was overthinking it quite a bit. There's a company in Indianapolis called Amplify. Adam Weber is one of the co-founders, and he's a guy that I kind of bounce ideas off of quite a bit. He's been their VP of sales for some time. And I called him and said, hey, I'm struggling with this thing. And I know you care a ton about this, right? He's a deep guy when it comes to relationships with the people he manages. And he gave me some great guidance and then directed me to a podcast from like 2005. Which I was impressed that there were podcasts in 2005, but somebody was on the cutting edge, I suppose. But it's called the Manager Tools Podcast. And it just kind of laid out, like, it just totally sold me on why the one-on-one can be such a powerful tool. And they actually call it the most powerful managerial tool that exists. Strong language. But I definitely appreciated their stance. They were also selling, coaching for one-on-ones. So I get that too. But very simple stuff. And that one-on-one each week, and I have 9 direct reports. And so every Tuesday for a half an hour, I meet with each one of them. And I think that has been a powerful thing. I hope it's been as powerful for them. They say it has, but you know, I hope it's been as powerful for them as it has for me. But at the end of the day, Tuesday, I'm wiped. I'm exhausted emotionally, physically, because we do a lot of them walking. But I'm wiped, but man, I feel so good at the end of Tuesday, even though I'm so exhausted. And that's been a big area where I feel like I've added a lot of value to just letting them be who they are.
So that's awesome. And I do mine on Mondays with our rev team. And by the end of the day, I'm wiped. And I've convinced one of our team leads who lives in the same area to move our regular meeting to Monday evenings. We leave a little bit early and we walk home. And so, yeah, it gets us out. You know, we usually have, you know, a longer than average meeting, a longer than average stuff to talk about. And sitting down in a meeting for an hour and a half every week is just not something that I can handle. And it's like, I'll pay for a cab home if you walk with me. And it's like, that's the best money I've spent every week. Because it's not only an hour and a half that I'm not sitting, it's an hour and a half that I get to walk and create this connection. So talk to me about the structure of the one-on-ones now that you're doing it. So what changed? What are you doing differently than before?
Yeah. And I mean, I totally ripped this off, by the way. This is not mine, but I think there are a few things that are most important about this. One is get the meeting on the schedule, like have them recurring, have the expectation that they're going to happen. If you need to move it, things come up, you move it, right? You decide that together, that happens. But if you cancel it, you got to reschedule it. And I think the thing that I learned the most is the way that you open the meeting sets the tone for the next 30 minutes. Right. And so you want to do everything you can to set the tone as an open opportunity. And I've explained all of this and why I do it, but every one-on-one starts the same way, which is what's on your mind. Right. So it might be Colin, it might be some deals, right? Maybe close to the end of the quarter, got some things moving. It might be a big deal. It might be an interesting deal. It could be a lot of things that are deal related. It might be something about prospecting. It might be something about some of the territory development that our AEs do. But it also might be about, hey, we got some bad news in the family this week. Might be, I'm struggling with this thing, or I got a flat tire on the way to work today. I go, like, this thing is on my mind, right? It's all sorts of things. And I have learned so much about it. We're heavy into PI at Less and Lay. So I feel like I have a little bit of a cheat sheet about who people are or might be. But I've learned so much about who people are and kind of how to communicate with them individually just by having this time. And the whole idea is that first 20 minutes is yours. And we'll leave 10 minutes for me if there's anything that I have on my mind. And that's kind of the agreement that we've made. But sometimes there are things on their mind that are so important. Like, just skip my time, right? I'll come back to that. I'll set a meeting later if I need to, right? Or kick it to the next week. But it really allows us to really connect as people, as individuals, a lot less about, you know, I guess in a more old school fashion, I'm your boss, you report to me. And really just kind of levels the playing field. Like we both have these lives. And it turns out they ask questions about me and they ask questions about my family. And we spend a lot of time getting to know each other. And as you move through the actual business and the work we do, it's super beneficial to be able to keep those things in mind, how to communicate with them, the things that they might be going through in their life. It's helped me develop a lot of empathy and understanding on how to approach certain situations. And that agenda has been, I think, the biggest shift for me, and letting it be okay that we just do that kind of stuff, whatever's on their mind, rather than have some focused thing each week that they need to prepare for.
Yeah, that's fair. I do something similar. I used to follow, if you've read Ben Horowitz's Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Yeah.
He has a structure for, you know, his one-on-ones in there. And I used to follow that and I was very rigid about it. Yeah. And it's, I can see if it's like at an executive level at a really fast moving startup where you're like breaking things and things are moving at the speed of light, like I can see that potentially with the right set of people having a huge impact.
Yep.
But what I found for, you know, we're growing, but we're not growing 800% year over year. We're growing like 100%, you know, 200%. Mm-hmm. And things, when you're doing that, things aren't changing that much from mm-hmm. week to week. And so I just found like we were asking the same questions and it was designed to like get like really negative stuff out, which is really good. Mm-hmm. And so I try and cherry pick like things out of there every now and then. Yep. But I found switching to, you set the agenda, what do you have on your plate? And then mm-hmm. I'll go, if I've got a couple things just like you, once mm-hmm. we get to the end, it's like, okay, I had a couple things. And chances are like people are pretty dialed in. I ask them to come. My only ask is that they come with an agenda, is yep. that they put a few minutes into thinking about how we're going to spend our time. Yep. If they do that, I'll give them as much time as they want. And mm-hmm. if they take the whole session, just like you, they get the whole session. Yep. Usually the things that I want to talk about, they're picking up on already, which just, it's way easier when they're coming to me and saying, hey, I'm struggling with this or I need help with that, as mm-hmm. opposed to me being like, hey, have you noticed that you kind of suck at this?
Yeah.
Not how you would say it, but.
Sure. Sure.
Maybe I would, because I'm, you know, having fun. But.
I wouldn't.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, no, totally. And I like the idea of a little preparation or a lot of prep. I mean, if people, if that's what's on their mind, do it. Right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the big things for me, as I think about that, is just kind of as you said, open it up a little bit. Let them share. And if there are things where I need to go to somebody and say, hey, we got to talk about this thing that you really suck at. I'm probably not going to do it in the one-on-one. Right. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be a different thing that happens, whether it's a deal review or I might schedule some different time. But I almost have started to feel like that's some pretty sacred time. Mm-hmm. And if I trample on it and create some distrust and create, and distrust meaning by like, I don't know what's on Justin's mind. Mm-hmm. He might steamroll me with this thing that's really important. I think there's probably a better outlet for that.
Totally agree. Usually the things are, yeah. I totally agree. So that's the one-on-ones. What, anything else with one-on-ones before we move to forecast reviews? Cause I definitely want to pick your brain there and see how you guys are running those.
Yeah. I mean, nothing else that I've learned or heard specifically. I just, you know, again, it's just about the connection and it can be emotional. Sometimes it can be about business. Either way, it's okay.
Totally. I really, really big fan of like when there's personal things on the go, in their mind, if that's sort of top of the mind, it's hard to get past that. It's like a mental blocker. And we talked about this in the pre-interview, how you were like, if they're like, you got a flat tire, be like, listen, go take care of your tire, like go get that done first before you can, because then otherwise you can't bring your full self to the call. You can't bring your full self to the office. You gotta, if you've got something that's, you know, that's really bugging you, that's on your mind, and it's a personal matter, go get it taken care of. Take time out of your day to go focus on that first and then get it done. And I think that's one thing that I love about how you guys treat your people.
Yeah. And again, like this is like top down situation, right? This is Max Yoder and Connor Bird, our president. I mean, this is how they treat things. Right. And I think they have a really good understanding that they model it incredibly well. And that's the expectation. And that feels really good to be able to show up. I mean, it makes me want to be more successful, to see Less and Least succeed and to see the people succeed, just because they've given me that approach.
Right on. So speaking of watching Less and Least succeed, let's talk about your forecast reviews.
Sure.
So do you do these one-on-one? Do you do them in a group? How does that work?
Yeah, I've done one-on-one. I was doing one-on-ones and then on Tuesdays and then Thursdays we were meeting again one-on-one to talk about forecast reviews. I've done it in all different ways. And what I've kind of settled on and I shared before I was ready here and said, hey, I want to test this thing. And we tested it, I think last quarter. So we're about a quarter and a half in. And we're a quarter and a half in because it's gone well from the AE's perspective. I've taken kind of the approach of, you know, this isn't about me putting somebody on the stand, and in front of a jury and really just drilling them down and creating a sense of fear. right? This is about, hey, I've got some sales experience that I'm really lucky to have. I've had some lucky coaches and some lucky mentors, and they've taught me some things that I'd like to share with you. And I can look at a pipeline and see probably different things than you're seeing. So one of the things that we started doing is that every Friday morning from 8 to about 10, sometimes it bleeds over to 10:30, depending on what's going on, I separate myself and I do all 9 pipeline and forecast reviews for that 2.5 hours. I've probably done a little bit of prep work on Thursday evening just to kind of get myself reoriented for the week, toward the end of the week, I mean. And then I create my observations, right? It's all about my observations, and there are a handful of goals here. One, it's about observations and recognition time, right? If I'm doing my job well, I probably have done plenty of it in general throughout the week, especially on the recognition side. But I want to say, hey, I see this thing that's interesting. Tell me a little bit about that. The second thing is identify areas to coach or areas to work on that we can work together, where I might say, hey, I'm noticing this thing. Based on the data, I'm going to put a half an hour on the calendar and we're going to go talk about it. And then the third one is for me to process, right? I process data, in kind of a goofy way. I actually need to like play with some things. So even though we've got nice fancy dashboards and all the information is there, I still need to write things down. And then I basically take everything, take my thoughts for each person and send them via Slack on Friday morning before noon. With the ask that they reply to my between 1 and 7 things, 7 bullets, 7 observations, by the end of the day. And that starts kind of the dialogue, and it happens via Slack. And sometimes we're sitting next to each other. Sometimes we're not, sometimes they're traveling. But by Monday around noon, I have a really good handle on if we need to meet about a certain thing, if we need to do a deal review, if things are misplaced in the forecast, if hygiene sucks, all of those things. By Monday midday, I have a really good sense of what's happening on the team, so that I can walk into our managerial pipeline forecast reviews every Tuesday and feel confident in what's present.
Interesting. So when you say you take, you know, 2.5 hours every Friday morning, yep, this is you and your computer and a cup of coffee. This isn't you and the whole team.
Just me, my computer, a cup of coffee, my headphones. And I'm usually listening to some version of 90s hip hop.
Cool.
The four of us.
That's awesome. And so you're basically looking for things to celebrate, mm-hmm, coaching opportunities, yep, and you're sharing your thoughts through Slack.
Don't, yep. And there are really like 3 main components. There's the hygiene component.
Yeah.
There's the micro view, which is the deal level, right? And then there's the macro view. It's like, how healthy is your pipeline? Where are the risks? Where are the risks going into next quarter or 2 quarters from now? What should we be thinking about early? So that we can set ourselves up for success further on down the line.
Gotcha. So the micro is like the hygiene factors of like, hey, I notice you don't have this, this isn't updated, or that's not there. And then the macro is like, okay, well, this is what it looks like your commit is going to be.
Yeah.
How does that look?
Totally. And I think I actually separate hygiene out. Like I will actually go and say, hey, you've got 2 deals that are, you know, close date was last week. We're in this week, what gives, right? So there's some hygiene stuff there that happens. People travel, think it happens. But really we talk a lot about owning your business through the use of Salesforce. And then I guess the micro view is a little bit more, about deal progress and risk and, you know, what the forecast looks like for the particular quarter. We pressure test it a little bit, and really talk about prospecting activity and results and things like that. So it's a little bit more geared into like, what do things look like from a deal perspective right now, as it relates to the remainder of the quarter. And then the macro view is forward facing beyond the quarter in most cases.
Gotcha. Okay. So hygiene is sort of, are you doing the things we ask you to do? Then the micro is sort of the what's happening this quarter. Are you on, ahead, behind? What do you need to do? Do you need to dial up prospecting activity? Do you need to dial back on XYZ? Do you need some help with this or that? Yeah. Are you putting in the right activity levels in order to hit your goals? Does it look like you're going to hit your goals? That's the micro. And then the macro is sort of those same things, but zoomed out to the year, the rest of the year or the next couple of quarters?
Next couple of quarters for sure. Absolutely.
Cool. How, out of curiosity, what is your, what's an average sales cycle look like for you?
Just over 60 days.
60 days. Okay.
Yep.
One of the things I always struggle with is the, like, we have a shorter, it's probably more like 30 days, and like looking out beyond a couple of months is just pure fiction. Cause you're like, well, those deals haven't come in yet.
Yep. Totally. And I think that's the, one of the reasons that, that, that we're, that, that I think we have the ability to do that is because inbound is a lot faster than outbound. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of things that are self-sourced that are AE generated, those are even longer, in some cases. And some of them are territory plays and all sorts of things. So, in that situation, we're looking at things like prospecting activity, prospecting results, territory development, events that they're putting on, things like that. But also looking at, hey, we know that there are these three deals that are sizable that are going to take a little bit longer in your pipeline. Mm-hmm. How is that going to help you shape up for next quarter? And even in Q, Q4, two quarters ahead.
Oh, that's really cool. So one last question that I want to move to the lightning round. If you're not doing this in person, how do you inspire fear on your team?
Yeah. Hopefully I don't. Hopefully the any fear that an AE feels is because we've hired the right people, right? And I feel like if you hire the right people, especially in sales, they come with almost a built-in fear of not being successful, right? And that a lot of times is the driver. I would prefer that it's looked at as like, hey, I don't have a fear of being successful. I would just rather be really excited about what it looks like to be successful. But in certain situations, that fear can be a driver. And I feel like we've hired the right people, and people know, right? People know when things are going a little bit awry. And they are very, very quick to raise their hand and say, hey, not feeling good right now. I'm a little scared. Can we talk about that? Normally those things aren't necessarily a surprise to either one of us. We've probably talked a little bit about them before that hand goes up. Mm-hmm. But I think it all comes back to getting the right people on the bus. Again, we go through a pretty rigorous process with a role play early on and meeting the team. And I think that helps us find the people with the right kind of drive.
Gotcha. So if you have the right people on the bus in the first place, then you don't have to worry about inspiring fear among the ranks, and you can do your forecasts over Slack.
Yeah, that's my hope.
I like it, man. I'm definitely gonna
kind of ingest, but I probably took it a little bit too literal.
No, that's cool. I get to play the idiot and queue up all the good questions for you, right? That's my job. I am your jester.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'll send you $100 for that.
Perfect. We'll just like send each other. Now we've evened out. If you send me $100 Canadian, I'm going to be choked.
Ooh, I don't even know if I know how to do that. How do you send loonies?
You go to the Great White Igloo. That's what we use as a bank. So really appreciate you coming on. Before we go, I want to give you a chance to share a little bit of more specific knowledge about in the lightning round. So let's talk to me about how do you get people to reply to your emails?
Yeah, I think, I don't know how lightning this is going to be because I think I send a lot of different kind of emails. So some I coach on and others that I actually have to send. But in most cases, I get them to reply with brevity. Just be quick, clear, to the point. And then I typically will add personality in the postscript, right? P.S. You know, I'm headed to the Great White Igloo. Can I get you anything? And also to add value, right? The other in most cases is add value, whether that's an introduction or a lead or something that I saw that made me think of somebody, or you know, if I know somebody well that is a prospect, and I catch some news, adding value to them at that kind of micro of a level is helpful, and they typically are appreciative of that. Other cases, I express concern. Hey, you told me this, this, and this 3 months ago. I'm concerned we're not going to be able to hit those goals if we don't do this, this, and that. And then there's always like the Hail Mary, right? And I coach on the Hail Mary a lot. Somebody's kind of going dark. I love one of my favorite last emails is just subject line, close the file, question mark. And it's very simple. Colin, should we close the file on your account? Justin. Even if the answer is yes, close the file, I'm okay because I've got clarity from somebody who I didn't have clarity from. So that's one that we use quite a bit for that situation. Hopefully we can avoid getting to that situation, but it happens.
Right on. Totally. It's natural. Like most of the deals are going to get to go either, they're not going to move forward. Right. And so hopefully they don't just go dark. You actually can shut it down together. They're respectful of your time and all that.
I like the way you said that. Shut it down together.
Exactly.
I'm totally using that.
Steal it. Love it. So when you're on a phone, when you're on a cold call or call and you're just getting the brush off, how do you handle that?
Just very simply. It sounds like I reached you at a bad time. How about I call you at 3:15? You think that'd be a better time?
So you're going for the specific ask of, hey, like, let me call you a little bit later.
Yeah. I think the most important thing is like, hey, it sounds like I reached you at a bad time, or it sounds like this is a bad time. And what I have found just by calling that out is that, in most cases, people will realize that they're not paying attention, the attention, giving you the attention that maybe they said they would give you. Or maybe if it's on a cold call, it's a little bit different story, but usually people will, you know, get up, shut the door and say, hey, I'm really sorry about that. I got some stuff going on that I need to handle. I'm all yours. Or they'll say, actually, yes, great call. I need to get the hell out of here. Call me tomorrow.
Yeah. Cause I guess you never know what people have going on in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talked, had to kick something back a couple of weeks ago because we were in the hospital because my wife's pregnant and had a kidney stone. Didn't expect it. Right. Mm-hmm. Those things happen. And had that happened while I was talking to you, I probably would have been a little bit distracted. You probably would have said, hey, Justin, it seems like something's going on. Should we just get it?
Yeah, that's fair.
Sorry if I got a little bit too much detail there.
Nope. We'll edit out all the personal stuff. Don't worry. So what do you need to do when you, what do you do when you need to push at the end of the quarter?
Ideally, we don't have to push. Right. But let's be real. We do have to push sometimes. And, there are a couple of things. One of them is identifying risk and finding opportunities, right? So if we're pushing 2 weeks there, maybe we have a couple of high risk things. We start looking around and saying, hey, who have we talked to in the past, that might have, that maybe we should re-engage, that maybe if we added a little bit extra value to the opportunity or the opportunity to work with us, maybe they would listen. So we start looking around for opportunity, as well as really kind of keying in on that risk. That usually starts at about the beginning of the third month of the quarter, right? So we're really kind of keyed into some of the bigger deals, where the risk is, and making sure that we're using all the resources we can to move it in the right direction. But the finding the opportunities is a fun one. It's a strategy that we've tested a few times. We call it sprint week internally. And that really is just going back past 6 months, closed loss, people that have said, hey, you're too expensive. And that's kind of how it ends. We might go back with them and say, hey, I've got some flexibility right now. Right. If we're ahead in the quarter, from a company perspective and a team perspective and an individual perspective, we don't need to do it. Right. This is a little bit of a catch up strategy. We probably leave a little bit of money on the table, but it helps kind of the whole team, you know, push a few things forward that might not have been opportunities in the first place.
Awesome. And I love that you're doing this going back to deals from 6 months ago that you've already lost, as opposed to let's just compromise to get a couple deals over the line.
Yeah.
Sort of active pipeline where you're leaving money on the table.
Yeah. I mean, if we've pulled levers that we expect people to sign agreements with us by a certain time and said, hey, because of the speed component, you know, we'll give you a percentage off. And that's meaningful to us. That's meaningful to you. Seems like a fair thing. Rather than just going back and saying, hey, we'll triple that if you do it. That's probably pretty harmful to the business, probably pretty harmful to other clients when you talk a little bit about pricing integrity. And that probably isn't the greatest practice. So we go and look for other opportunities if we can.
Cool, man. I love Sprint Week. I think that's a great idea. I'm definitely going to steal that and look for opportunities and risks.
I'll send you a lesson on it. We've got a good lesson on it. You can do with it as you please.
Sweet. Thanks, man. Want to move to the last chance. I said I'd give you a chance to promote yourself, the company, whatever it is you want in the most cold call way possible. Time for the role play. You ready for this?
I'm ready. And this is awesome because I just got off of a role play with a ramping AE right before we talked. So I'm in like full role play mindset right now.
Awesome. I love that there's no excuses coming out. Well, I haven't cold called in so long, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no way. No way. Let's do it.
Awesome. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
I'm sorry. Hey, Colin. This is Justin at Lessonly.
Hey, eager, aren't you?
I am. And Colin, especially since I realized you weren't expecting my call. Can I take 30 seconds to tell you why I'm calling, and then you can decide if we should keep chatting?
I'm just about to head into a meeting.
Oh, sounds like I reached you at a bad time. How about I call back at 3:15?
Sure.
Okay. Now it's 3:15. We just did the same thing, and you said yes.
Okay.
Okay. Colin, we work with customer-facing teams like the one that you run, and our mission really is to help teams do better work so they can live better lives. We do that through training software and the value framework that we sell. But leaders like you typically come to us because they're worried their teams aren't able to keep up with rapid change in their business, right? They're concerned that their teams aren't up to date with the tools and processes that they have in place. And they're flat out frustrated because these things are just resulting in them not hitting goals with KPIs, sales metrics, that type of thing. So Colin, that's my 30 seconds. Is there any reason for us to keep talking?
Sounds good, man. I like it.
Shout out to a couple of Sandler people there, Tim Wackel and John Maxwell in Chicago. That's their script that I've used in the past and had a decent run with.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Got to ask, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Justin@lessonly.com is my email. That's always probably the best way. Once you have that, you'll have my cell phone number and then, you know, you can text me and that's good too. Also I'm on Twitter @Justin_Clifford, not incredibly active, but I'll probably put you in a group and like your tweets.
Sounds good. Friends with any big red dogs?
Most big red dogs are friends of mine, including the ones called Clifford.
Right on. Cue the outro music. Thanks for coming on the show, Justin. Cool. See everybody next week.
Appreciate it.